Thank you for listening to the Content Magazine podcast, Conversations with Silicon Valley's Creatives. I'm Daniel Garcia, your host and the cultivator of Content Magazine, published by SV Creates. This episode of the Content Magazine podcast is brought to you by Bonfire, a Silicon Valley digital agency building elevated websites for ambitious brands. Find out more about Bonfire at bonfire.com.
I want a real loud one.
Oh, wait, well, you count it off again.
One, two, three. We kind of missed it. All right, we'll do another one at the end. Okay. All right, so...
Hello.
Okay. Hello. Welcome to the Content Magazine podcast. We are here today live in the content studio with Alyssa Ray Graciano, who is at Mockla. What's your official title now there?
It's pretty long. It's visual arts curator. Okay. And that's because we're going to eventually have a performing arts curator.
Oh, yeah. Some stuff in the works.
Yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm,
so did people hear that? Here first that's happening?
Well, yes and no. We've had the position before, but now that, you know, we kind of got through a little bit of this pandemic ridiculousness, we're hopefully bring it back soon.
Yeah, cool.
Yeah.
So before we get to talk about Mockla, we have to do two things. We have to find out all about you, who you are, and how you got involved in the arts.
Mm-hmm.
But even before that, just to seed it in people's heads, what does Mockla stand for?
Ooh, Mockla is Movimiento de Arte y Cultura Latinoamericana.
Yes.
Yes. So
Americana.
Americana. Yeah. So essentially, we just celebrate the entirety of the Latino diaspora by way of art. So visual art, performing art, and then we also have a really strong youth space where we really cultivate the youth and what they're trying to do in self-expression, and try to help them continue, whether it's in the arts or not, just help kind of build those skills that we don't get in high school or real life ever.
And Ruben kind of runs that.
Yeah, right? Ruben and Angelica run that.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're really good at it.
Awesome.
I see youth there all the time, and they like love being there. And I'm like, oh, that's awesome. I wish I had that.
Well, cool. We'll get to more about Mockla in a minute. But first, how did you first get involved even in art and creativity? Would you say as a little Alyssa Rayita?
Yeah, you know, because I interview artists now, and they all say like, oh, when I was four, I was drawing with a crayon. Yeah. And we all say it kind of sounds cheesy, but yeah, I have a father who's an artist here. I was born and raised here, and we actually grew up over on 1st and Taylor in Japantown. And so my dad would bring me around all around Japantown, all around First Street, to all the gallery openings.
Yeah.
I remember sitting on the floor of a Works Gallery. I don't even remember what location it was, but I remember.
They've had a few.
Yeah, they've had a few. It was at Works Gallery, and my dad was in a show with Bilad and Emilio Banuelos and Elena Carrasco.
Okay.
And me and Olivia actually were just sitting on the floor, just kind of playing around, and they were installing their work. So that was kind of my first experience to what kind of like the art world even looked like. And my dad always just had, you know, clay, crayons. My mom made sure that I always had like a to-go art bag of just things to carry when we were out and about, just to color away.
That's cool.
Yeah.
So then now, and then because I first met you when you were doing Black Sheep.
Made,
right? So that was doing the yarn and all that kind of stuff, the cool stuff you were doing with the arms and everything like that.
Mm-hmm.
Was that kind of your first kind of like coming out in the art world, or did you do some other kind of art practice and things before?
No.
Or was that kind of like the first entree
into
the scene?
I don't want to count high school band. I did play alto saxophone for like 8 years.
Oh, really?
But now
we'll cut into the audio of you playing
alto
saxophone.
I don't think your listeners will like that very much. It was no Lisa Simpson. I would say the Black Sheep Made was my first kind of intro to the art world, like you said. I really started as product-based. I was heavy in like crochet, knitting, weaving, macrame.
Yeah.
And it went from being product-based to just kind of creating what I liked to realizing that I could teach workshops with it. And then from workshops, I went to pattern design and started not only designing for my own brand, which is Black Sheep Made, but other brands around the country, mostly in Portland, since I lived there for a bit. And then That somehow developed into writing a whole book of patterns,
right,
publishing a book.
That's
still
awesome.
Don't believe that happened.
That's cool.
And then actually the book published right at the beginning of the pandemic.
Yeah.
And I felt so weird about asking people, like, we all lost our jobs.
Right.
And I was like, I don't want to ask you to spend your last $20 on this book that you're not going to read. Like,
yeah,
it's very niche. Like, you could read it. I have some funny stories in there.
A lot of people took up knitting and crocheting during the pandemic. Yeah.
Yeah. And I had a lot of people like, this is the perfect time to push your book. But I felt so weird about it that for me, the book ended up being kind of like the closing chapter of that kind of that iteration of my art career.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
but
I ended
through,
on the high.
Yeah. Wait, so then we were doing Black Sheep Made. That kind of brought you into, I think really kind of brought you into the San Jose kind of like
for sure.
art scene because the SJ Made markets and stuff. Was that kind of like the where you got started to get real connected? And
My first big pop-up was the, I think it was like the first SJ Made holiday pop-up that they used to do in the convention center. And I knit day and night to fill up just a half booth. But yeah, that was my first experience in kind of like this maker world that's really evolved over the last 6-7 years. And then I remember summer 2017 was when SJ Made started the what was it, the night market at Gordon Biersch?
And
it was like, I think it was like $50 a booth per week. And they opened up they opened up every week all at once. And I signed up for like 8 in a row.
Oh, wow.
I was like, let's just figure this out.
Yeah,
and it was crazy. So every week I would come with a different product or I would come with, I would bring a dog. To try to attract people.
To attack people.
Because I would do those dog beds and that would really get people
that's
into
right,
it.
The dog beds were cool.
But yeah, just kind of see like, okay, what sold this week? What didn't? What are people asking for? And pretty much every week I would set up as like a whole new iteration. Like I was never the same.
Yeah, cool.
And it was really fun to just kind of play around with.
Yeah.
My favorite thing was live making.
Yeah,
so,
well, I remember you at the maker's market, you're standing there and with you're like knitting with your arms.
Yes.
Yeah.
So I really like that immersive experience. And that's actually something I've carried out throughout my career. So it's something I try to encourage artists to do at Makla. Yeah. Like during installation, I'll be like, oh, hey, you're going to paint a mural on the wall. Do you want to do that during opening night during the preview? So that way people kind of see hands-on what that experience is like.
Yeah, that's cool. That's cool. That's that kind of informed the way that you're curating now at the gallery. So
that
I felt like that's where I first you kind of came on the scene, even though you kind of grew up in San Jose, like I hadn't really seen you around.
Yeah, I really wasn't. I was still a kid, really. And then I left for college and that's where I really got started with my business.
Okay.
And
yeah.
so when I moved back, when I graduated and moved back, I was like, okay, how do I make this work?
So then it seems to me like, you know, there's a lot of makers and there's some great illustrators and artists and stuff like that that are doing kind of more commercial products than doing fine art because it's different. So was that kind of even in your thinking too of more like how can I be creative and have a career or like what was kind of going on? Were you thinking like a product is a way like a, I don't know, I'm gonna say a commercial product. What do we call it? A consumer?
It was definitely a product. Yeah. I mean, it was, I think it was an accessible product. It was at an accessible price point. And I really never thought art was going to be a career.
Right.
It was just something that I did on the side. It was really fun. People paid me for it.
Yeah.
That was cool.
That's nice.
Okay.
Yeah.
But I think at that time, I didn't see such a strong maker community. Like now here in San Jose, it's strong. There's a maker market every weekend. But back in 2017, SJ Made was really just getting started. And I think that was part of the reason why I just up and left to Portland was because they already had a community that was so supportive. And that's really where I saw that it could actually be a bit more sustainable of like maybe doing a market every month, doing some workshops every month. But yeah, that going from product to fine art was a huge jump. I wouldn't even say now that I'm a fine art artist. Like, I actually struggle with that idea of like putting my art out in the world, knowing that other artists who are really practicing fine art, who have studied it, see my work and they're like, oh, you're curating my stuff?
Oh.
But like, you know, you're not, I didn't study it. I kind of stand by that a lot because I don't have a degree in it. I have a bit of insecurity around like, should I be curating this work? I should. I'm a badass. I have a stylistic
experience.
Point of view.
Yeah,
I have experience.
Totally.
But that's definitely a thought that comes through when I post about my art now. Because like I said, Black Sheep Made's done and it was so different.
Yeah.
But now that I am trying to get into painting or assemblage or sculpture, I do start to think, okay, fine art? How do we define that?
Yeah, that's a big question.
Yeah.
Well, it's kind of cool, though, that you're on that journey, too, because then when you're working with artists, you can understand mm-hmm. kind of their process and stuff. But how did then you go from doing, during that time, were you working a different job, too? So, like, you were doing the Black Sheep.
Yeah. So, for about 3 years at the beginning of Black Sheep Made, I was working as a contractor for Apple. I studied languages, so it's cool. I got to do some language stuff there.
Oh, right. Well, time out there then. You studied language, linguistics or what?
Languages, linguistics, and literature in Spanish and French.
Ah,
please don't ask me to speak French. I can do Spanish,
okay.
No problem. Like, it's kind of part of the life. But French, I was fluent. I was writing essays at one point, but you know, you don't practice it. And then I'm like, my name is.
Yeah. French is hard though, especially if you speak Spanish, because it's similar, like reading hecka easy. But speaking is like they don't pronounce any letters. Like they're
true. There are a lot of sounds that you take out. But also for me, it's whatever language, always been the speed. Because if you're a natural Spanish speaker, natural French speaker, there's a whole different cadence you're working with.
Yeah, totally.
Whereas you learn it in a school setting, like I understand you, but maybe just go a little bit slower.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. Okay, so that's interesting. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I didn't know that about you. Okay, so you're linguistic and you're at Apple.
Yeah, so I was contractor at Apple, studying languages. working with languages. And then I did that for about 3 years until I actually had a pop-up shop in Portland that allowed me to run Black Sheep Made as if it was my own brick and mortar. That was my first experience as like, I could do this every day.
Yeah.
It was actually a bit lonely being in a storefront all day.
Yeah, totally, yeah.
It was really weird. Oof. Yeah, it was rough. But that allowed me to take the leap from Apple to doing creative full-time. So what I did was I left Apple. I started managing DIY Bar in Portland where, you know, they give you craft supplies, a beer, instructions, you make the project, yay.
Yeah.
On the side, I was still running Black Sheep Made. I was running the social media for a local yarn shop, and I was running their events.
Oh, okay,
and so,
wow.
Yeah,
a lot of stuff,
so I kind of jumped into like that, I guess kind of the back into the maker community of let's have, you know, an artist talk at this yarn store or pattern designer at this yarn store.
Yeah.
So I was kind of doing that for a bit. And then eventually I quit both of those things and just did Black Sheep Made full time.
Yeah,
and
cool.
I was able to do it for almost 2 years and then the pandemic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that brought you back to San Jose.
Yeah, the pandemic brought me back to San Jose. And then that's actually coming to San Jose is how I was introduced to the arts nonprofits world.
Yeah.
Which I didn't really know existed.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So then you got that experience of doing events and social media and mm-hmm. working with the artist community, come back to San Jose, pandemic. And then also in there, how did you get to Mockla then? Okay, so you're back here.
Yes.
And then how did you?
So during the pandemic, I realized, I can't be a full-time artist right now because my main thing at that point was workshops. So very service-based, public-based.
Sure.
I almost became a delivery driver for Amazon because I was like, I need some sort of income.
Yeah.
But I actually ran into Amanda Rawson.
Yeah.
I always refer to her as a little local legend here in San Jose because she's everywhere. And she was like, hey, I know this organization called SV Creates. They're looking for a part-time assistant. I think you'd be great for it. And I was like, yeah, that sounds better than driving in an Amazon truck all day. Like, that's awesome. So I interviewed and I got it. And so I worked at SV Creates for
a year.
Total 2 years.
Oh, really?
But it was interesting. So I think for the first 5 months, I was like quarter time. I was doing like 12 hours a week.
Yeah.
And then I asked to go full time SV Creates. It didn't work out at the time. And so they actually referred me to New Mew Los Gatos.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
Yeah. And I got my way in there of like, yeah, I can do marketing, social media, e-newsletters.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was there for about 10 months. But the whole time I was there full time, I was still doing part-time work for SV Creates.
Right. That's
so,
right.
So, yeah, really stayed ingrained in kind of like the nonprofits world.
Yeah.
And then eventually I made the switch and did SV Creates full time and then was just coordinating workshops and handling social media at New Mew. So that was kind of how I got into the nonprofit world.
Yeah.
And then somebody sent me the opening at Makla about being a curator. And again, there's that insecurity of like, oh, I don't do fine art. I do maker stuff. But like you noticed, all the experience of social media, the event planning, kind of wrangling artists, that all led to like, oh, those are kind of the skills that a curator needs. And actually, during that whole time, I was volunteering with Gen Arts. And they had a summer exhibition. And I volunteered. That was actually the reason I joined Gen Arts, because I was like, oh, I want to curate that. And then, Makla, they were like, oh, you handled 32 artists for a whole month? You could do this.
Yeah, that's cool. So do you think, like, I mean, it's interesting just to hear, you know, definitely, like, working, like, in the tech world for, you know, getting some kind of income, doing your art on the side. But then even when you started doing art, like, you were helping these people out with this, those people out that. I mean, do you see that kind of a common theme in order for artists to kind of make it? It's like you're grabbing different types of things to do.
Yeah, you almost have to have like 4 or 5 different streams of income. I don't know if I would recommend it, because I don't think it's the healthiest. I don't think like I think our community, the maker community, the artist community, we hustle a ton. And I think that's great. And I'm a firm believer, and that's how I got to where I am. I just hustled. But I don't think that that's like the healthiest at this point. But I know you kind of have to hustle to at least make it to a point where you don't have to hustle as much.
Well, you definitely have to, no matter what you're doing, right? Like, it seems like, you know, when you're younger, like, and all that, you're on a journey of experimenting, like, you're tasting,
self-discovery, figuring out what you actually like. I learned that I actually dislike Instagram. Like, I was on Instagram a ton, and it helped me build a community. I would play funny games, like, what did Alyssa Ray forget today? And I was able to build a bond with folks. But after a while, there was, like, this expectation of, like, oh, I have to post now, and what's the algorithm? And I just got tired of it. Now I don't think I've posted in almost a year.
I know. Social media is, that's another kind of thing, right? Because as an artist or somebody who's doing these kind of different gig type of things, and you think, well, I have to be able to be in front of people and connect with them, and then it just becomes this drain.
Time suck, soul suck.
Yeah.
I mean, sometimes now with my arts practice, I just, you know, start painting at 10 p.m. and I get lost in it. And then at the end, I'm like, oh, I should have done a time lapse or something. Or it's like, well, the lighting wasn't great, so it wasn't going to look whatever. So then I just don't do it. But I mean, just do it.
I've had that a couple times too. Like, I'll be somewhere or I'm doing something, and I think, like, okay, well, you know, for content, you know, I should be. And I'm like, I forget. And I'm like, the reason I didn't do it, because I was enjoying myself.
Yeah,
like, I was a part of the
present.
Event. Yeah, I wasn't, like, clicking and all that kind of stuff. I mean, I admire those people who can do both. I just don't have that skill.
Yeah, I think I whether I had the skill or not before, I just did it. And now I'm like, okay, I don't want to do it anymore. I'm trying to practice, okay, what do I actually want to do in this arts world? Because after, like you said, trying all those things, now I'm like, okay, I've decided what I'm actually good at and what I like. How do I make those work?
Yeah, totally. So you're a pretty busy person. I mean, you do a lot of things. You've even talked about, you just kind of talking about from Black Sheep Made and Portland and back here and 6 different jobs. How do you kind of balance in that kind of like the care for Alyssa Ray's personal inspiration and filling up of yourself, as well as then giving out, especially in the nonprofit arts world with artists and stuff like that? What's kind of how do you, what's your practice? Are you in the process of finding that?
Oh yeah, can I come back when I figure that out? I will say, like, the job that I have, it's really nice, because whenever I have to go to arts events or openings or whatever, it doesn't feel like work. Especially in the San Jose community, you just get to see all your artist friends. And so that's really nice. But I have noticed, I definitely go in waves of like, okay, I kind of just need time to myself. And that's when either, that's when I'll jump into a specific art piece. I mean, like you notice, I'm somebody who always has like 10 projects going on at once. I've noticed that the recharging periods are when I actually just focus on one project. And I just sit, and whether it's like a week of that project at from 10 to midnight every day, I've noticed those are really helpful. But then also, I mean, I feel like I'm lying. I want to say bike riding. I really enjoy riding my bike, but because of all those projects, I never get to it. However, when I do, it's a really nice feeling.
Yeah.
And so I think for me, it's trying to incorporate, okay, how do I ride my bike more often to have those moments of like, okay, I'm not that stressed.
Yeah, yeah. So that's kind of a good way you get out there, get that physical energy.
Yeah, that physical energy. It's really the fresh air and just like moving.
Right.
Like I actually really enjoy walking everywhere here in downtown San Jose.
Yeah, yeah.
It's really nice to just take a break. Sometimes I'll take walking meetings.
That's cool. That's cool. Mm-hmm. That's good. So then now, also you were a part of Known Future, right?
No Future Gallery.
Would that kind of start with? Sean and Roanne, Sean Boyles and Roanne Victor.
Yeah, and then Fernando as well.
Yeah, kind of you're part of that. And you were creating a little bit of your own stuff, a little bit more in that space. And what was that you were working on and what was
so
that?
I'm trying to move into sculpture.
Okay.
So like I said, I'm done with at least public knitting. I don't want to knit for other people anymore, maybe family.
Yeah.
But I have a Michael's worth of yarn in my home, in my dad's home. It's too much. Yeah. And so I was like, okay, how can I use all of this material in another way?
Yeah.
And my dad does sculpture. He does wire sculpture, clay sculpture. So I was always fascinated by that. So I thought, okay, how can I make sculpture? There's actually an artist y'all have featured in the past. I think about a year ago, Jenny Resnick?
Sure.
I think so. She
Jennifer
did like these... Yeah.
She does...
all these like sculptures, and some of the characters look a little demented, and like they all look really funky.
It's kind of like in Toy Story when that one little thing comes together. She kind of does that kind of paintings, and then she does other kind of creations.
Yeah. I came across one of her sculptures over at Collide. During, I think, one or two Christmases ago. And it brought me into the world of assemblage, which is really just like taking pieces of everything and basically just hot gluing everything together. And so kind of what I'm doing now is trying to get into sculpture to where I'm essentially taking all the yarn that I had and hot gluing it to other objects to create kind of like these soft sculptures that actually aren't soft. Because like felting is kind of a great way to get into fiber sculpture, but it takes ages, years it can take. So I've taken to a hot glue gun. So gluing to objects. Also, eventually, I would like to paint with the yarn. So imagine an oil painting.
Yeah.
But then instead of paint, it's just yarn.
Right.
So kind of very patchy, Apache look. Patchy, splotchy, but using all of the yarn I have to kind of create both figurative and abstract works.
Yeah.
So it's still something I'm trying to figure out. I started trying to kind of flesh that out at No Future. Yeah. But eventually, you know, rent was raised. And
So you're talking about doing it more of actually using the yarn, like, you know, like swirling it around to do, not dipping the yarn in paint and then
which
could be kind of a fun
I
kind of envisioned like there's this dude who does like swings this paint bucket over a table, right?
That.
So you could do like
it's like spin art almost.
But
it would change the texture of the yarn.
I
want to keep that texture of the yarn, which hot glue already kind of changes it, because you can like if you touch it you can feel the hot glue. So it's really just like gluing the yarn, kind of swirling it around, maybe cutting it into smaller shapes and like bending it and stuff. I'm working on a secret project right now.
Secret project.
And it's actually a 4-foot by 8-foot panel, of three. And that's kind of what I'm doing. So I'm hot gluing. It's huge. So I think the total is one's 4-foot by 8-foot and the other two panels are 4-foot by 4-foot. But it's all just me gluing yarn to this panel.
Wow. That's a lot.
Yes.
So it's like 16x4 or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
That's huge.
Yeah, I've been working on it for 5 weeks and I've got a week and a half to go.
Awesome, cool. So then now, this is something, and I'm going to bring this up because I'm insecure about it as like a photographer, artist, whatever.
You are.
So with your, what's your perspective and what's your voice that you're bringing and what's your intention? And you probably have to look for that.
Ask that all the time.
Yeah,
I'm always like, so what's your message with this piece?
And what's your message with this 16x4 or with the kind of like sculpture yarn work fiber art that you're doing? Do you have a message?
I don't think so. I don't think I do right now. Okay. I think I'm still in that phase of trying to develop the style itself.
Okay. Yeah,
and then from there, the technique, the style, and then I can figure out a message. like, it's funny, a lot of artists who want to show at MACLA who will say, oh, but my work doesn't scream Chicano power. It doesn't, right. I'm not painting nopales. And you don't have to. The art is inherently Latino because you're a Latino artist and you made it. And I think that about my work. I mean, I'm not painting any kind of, you know, Chicano iconography or anything. But yeah, I don't think I have a message yet. I think I'm still in the very early stages.
Yeah.
Maybe a call to my father, like kind of a response to like growing up with an artist as a father. Like, he could do it, I could do it.
Yeah. That's cool. Yeah, I feel like when I read those kind of things that people do stretch it a little bit. Mm-hmm, you know what I mean? Like they're trying, they know that they have to. And I'm insecure because I've been thinking about it. And my kind of thing is that I just love photography, right? Can that be the message? Like capturing
that moment.
Real life and the moments. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
so
totally.
I don't know,
Yeah, and I think a lot of the time when creating art, especially with maybe painting or even knitting, like, it's that process of doing the work where I find for myself,
totally.
I'm working through a lot of other things.
Yeah.
Like maybe I was thinking about a problem that I was trying to solve earlier or working through the problem that is the piece.
Yeah.
I find that to be more of the process. And for me, when it's like that, well, whatever I was thinking about, I don't necessarily want that to be the message of the piece.
Right.
Because what if I was talking about like some trauma? I don't want to share that.
Well, maybe you should.
Maybe.
Yeah. And that's the interesting thing too, is because we can't help but bring ourselves to whatever we're doing, even though and then it's kind of when you look back and you kind of go through the connections that are coming out that are subconscious that you don't even realize that are kind of fun, like the happy accidents, I always call it, and stuff. Yeah.
Or also, like, you can take a photo and maybe you are just capturing the moment, but maybe you saw something in that moment, right? But as soon as you print it, frame it, and put it up on the wall, as soon as a viewer sees it, it's a completely different piece.
Right.
Because they bring their own meaning
to
it. So I think about that a lot of whatever I even say this piece is about, it almost doesn't matter.
Right.
Like it does, and it's probably the reason for the whole concept of the show. But as soon as somebody else sees it, they're going to be like, oh, I thought of my grandma when I was five when I saw that.
Yeah.
Like, cool.
But
well,
then, I've seen it, and it works the other way too. Like you'll see a show, like I'm horrible. When my wife and I we go to a gallery or something like that, I go through and I kind of like look at everything and she stops and she reads the thing, right? And I kind of go through and if I like it, then I go back and read it. And usually what happens is like, oh, like it enhances you know, too. But like, oh, I didn't realize they were whatever doing this. Like there's photography and they're blind. You know what I mean? Like, oh, that makes sense.
Yeah, I kind of do that as I read after the fact.
Yeah.
But I will say now being the curated gallery, I look at a lot of things differently. Like I inspect labels now. I'm how did they write this?
Once you start getting. So now, well, let's get to that now. So now you're the visual curator.
Visual arts curator.
Visual curator for MACLA. And so you've actually helped curate. Your first show was about
belonging. So it's called Pertenecer, to belong.
Right.
Yeah, that opened in December. So that was my first public show at MACLA.
Yeah, awesome. Mm-hmm. And tell me about a little bit of that process of putting that together, some of the things that were like cool, some of the scary things, and some of the things that you regret.
Ooh, yeah, the biggest scary thing was that I had like 5 weeks to put it together.
Okay, yeah. So
like the minus the 2.5 weeks for install, but I really had like 5 weeks to find some artists, talk about a concept, put this up, all of that. So that was the scariest part.
Yeah.
And because of that experience, now I have almost every show planned through like, I think like June of next year.
Just because you had like, your entry was this very short turnaround time and you're like, oh, this can be done in this amount of time. So you're like, oh, I'm going to get these ones scheduled out.
Or even like, I just never wanted to be pressed for that kind of time again.
Totally.
Even now I've been thinking, our upcoming show is The Auction. I've been thinking about that since December.
Right.
And I planned and planned and planned, but now I'm a week away from opening and I'm like, wow, even though I plan so much, there's still this pressure of what needs to be done
in
the time. So I think just allowing myself that one favor of like, okay, at least I know what the concept is next June, or I know one artist for next June, I can build on top of that instead of having the 5 weeks to be like, okay, let's start from scratch again.
Yeah. Okay, so five weeks, and you jumped in, and you kind of like connected with a lot of people that you kind of knew a little bit. Yeah.
Yeah, so I got to have some local legends here in San Jose. So Rayos Magos, Pilar Agüero Esparza, Christina McCotty. And I thought it was really important to have those folks because we know, I think San Jose knows Christina McCarty, like, in the maker scene. She's right. a really well-known illustrator, so I thought it'd really be exciting to have her in that fine art space to kind of break that barrier. And it was really cool because she used her classic iconography using a method called hojalatas, where you carve into aluminum. Excuse me. And so that was really cool to just break those barriers and then work with folks I've known around the scene, but really got to spend like intimate time with them in their studios, watching them create the work and just like understand their process. It was really awesome. And I don't, I was with them in their studios. I don't like to tell them what to paint, but I just like to watch. I love that behind the scenes stuff.
That's cool. Good. So, and then now the, so the next show, you've kind of helped then curate the auction that's coming up. This is the annual auction that Makla does every year for a fundraiser. It's always awesome.
Yeah.
So you kind of came in. I mean, there must be artists that they've already used every year. So it's just kind of hitting them an email up again and say, hey, man, can
I mean,
do it again?
Yes and no. Because like, I think for me, my whole curation style is I want to build relationships and then continue building those. And I don't ever want an artist to think that we're just hitting them up for the auction.
Sure, totally.
Like, I actually want to understand their practice. Yeah. I want to know what they're working on moving forward.
Yeah.
Maybe, you know, maybe we have used them a lot in the last 10 years. Maybe they've already had a solo show or something, but if their upcoming work fits in the group show in June, then let's include that. But I won't know that unless I built that relationship. So there's definitely a list of people who we've worked with in the past, and I essentially combed through all of Makla archives. They have really detailed binders of like everything that's been shown.
Yeah.
And so I just combed through and I was like, okay, yeah, we can hit up these folks. But I will say this show has a lot of emerging artists. I wanted to balance kind of, you know, heavy hitters, seasoned artists who've been in the game with folks who haven't had as much exposure. I think it's important to not only bring those communities together so that way during at some point in the show those artists can meet, but then to just, you know, level the playing field a little bit.
That's cool. That's good. What was something that surprised you putting together either the first show or this or the auction? What's something that kind of like you're like, oh.
Oh, man, how much actually goes into curating a show? I think one thing like, okay, it's one thing to get the artists to talk to them about their concept. But did you remember to buy the paint? Did you print out the labels? Did you make the brochure? It just, I felt like every day there was something that, like, I, when you look at an exhibition, you're like, oh, yeah, it has labels or it has a little pamphlet. But then, like, oh, we have, that just doesn't appear. We have to make it. So that was a bit of like these tiny surprises every day. Something that was shocking about this show was kind of just the breadth of work. And because this is the only
How many pieces in this auction?
Ooh, 45 and still counting.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So this piece, like, we don't give a theme. Typically for our shows, we have concepts. For this one, we just say we're celebrating Latinidad through the best contemporary art of the Bay Area and beyond. So that's very broad. You can can almost show me anything.
Right.
Like, okay. Sure. But I do try to tailor it. Like, I try to have, okay, what is this piece? What conversation is it having with that piece? How is it going to look on the wall together? So I did curate this show a little bit better. But it was a surprise just to see like how much can be produced so quickly. Some artists gave me work that they made last year. Some artists were like, okay, I made it over this past weekend. Like they turned it around quick. So that was, I think always just how much needs to be done is like, I know how much needs to be done, but
lot.
It's a surprise.
You gotta, and you have to hang them and you have to place them and
hanging,
all that kind of stuff.
And
crazy.
Even the auction, like we hang in a certain way. So that way, because there is no theme, what mini themes, what mini compositions can we create with the work that we have? Make it flow.
That's cool. That's awesome. And so now when's the auction? And tell me about when does it open up and what's all that kind of deets?
So I'm installing tomorrow and Monday.
Sweet.
The auction opens April 7th, so next Friday. All of our exhibition openings actually line up with the first Friday.
First Fridays, okay.
Best turnout.
So April 7th?
Yeah, April 7th. And then it'll be up for about 6 weeks. Yeah. And then the actual live auction is on May 20th. The exhibition is open, free to the public. All our exhibitions are free to the public, and you can come in and see it anytime you want. There's actually even a section where you can like the minute you walk in, if you see something, you could just buy it right there. Yeah. But then there are other pieces where you have to come to the auction and bid, like a classical auction where they're talking fast and you raise your paddle. It's really cool.
And then you have to, do you have to buy a ticket to come
back?
You
do have to buy a ticket.
RSVP all that kind of stuff for the May 20th
Yeah, for the May 20th for the live auction, you do have to buy a ticket. Yeah. I think they're 100, 125.
Yeah.
Probably something I should know. But yeah, you do have to buy
a ticket. It's on the website.
Yeah, it's on the website, on Eventbrite. But, you know, we have food and drinks and, you know, we make it lively. We'll have a photo booth because it's a fundraiser, but we try to have a bit of a party to celebrate our artists, to celebrate our supporters who come in, and really just try to make a nice little evening out of it.
Yeah. It's going to be fun.
Yeah. I've never actually experienced one. You've been to one.
Yeah. I've been to a couple of them, I think.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. They're fun. Yeah. Let's see what else. Let's do, what for you, for Alyssa Ray, if you look into the future, where do you think you'll be? Where do you want to be? Where are you kind of building to as you're grabbing these different experiences and throwing spaghetti on the wall and all that kind of stuff? What's the plate that you would like to have set before you?
I think it's a big ask, but I would eventually like to curate out of the country.
Out of the country.
I really want to curate.
You want to be out of the country and curate for this country?
No, I want to curate for another country elsewhere. Like, I think, like, maybe tap back into those language skills. Can I curate something in the French countryside, in France in general? Can I live in Mexico for a couple of years and curate something down there?
Yeah.
Like, how can I combine all of my worlds? I've also just always wanted to travel.
Yeah,
so,
totally.
Like, how can I make that real?
Yeah.
I think I will have to eventually get a master's in some sort of fine curatorial
museumology or whatever they call it.
Something, because most places require you to have that.
Yeah.
I've actually been thinking about public art a lot recently.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
And what that would look like. But maybe a master's, but for sure somehow curating out of the country.
Yeah,
I would really
cool.
like to do that.
To travel and...
Really travel.
And to get that kind of experience, yeah.
Yeah, and then actually this year... For my personal arts practice, my focus is on building that style that I'm still trying to carve out.
Yeah, that's cool.
So then I could create a portfolio and then next year apply for artist residencies.
Yeah,
so I think I'll always be on that path of myself as a practicing artist, but also curating.
Yeah,
I think it's a good balance to where I feel like I'm doing enough, where I don't need to pick up a third hobby or project. Probably will, though. But
Have you always been a person that just does lots of things? Have you always been like in high school, you were playing the alto sax, but then you were also like on the dance troupe or whatever?
Oh gosh, no. Two left feet. I was in photography though.
Oh yeah. Cool.
I was. My parents split when I was 7, and I think both of them kind of compensated in that way that we were always doing something.
Okay.
Like my dad, we were always going to the park, reading books, going to visit family, going down here in San Jose. And then with my mom, she was also taking me to all these places because I think they were each trying to make those weekends special.
Who did you live with more? Or did you, were you half and half?
Half and half.
A full on, like you had a full closet of this one, a full closet of
closet. I was very privileged in that way where my dad actually, we lived in a one bedroom apartment and he converted our living room into like a half bedroom for himself and he gave me the bedroom. I lived half and half. It was like half the school week with mom, half the school week with dad, and then they traded every other weekend.
Yeah.
So it was, I think because of how they treated weekends and then also always having to go back and forth. I think that's one of the reasons why I'm just always on the move, go, go, go. Like, why spend a weekend at home when there's a million
tons
events,
do,
so many things. Yeah. I can't, there's like 3 different concerts I want to go to just this Saturday.
Yeah.
And I'm like, come on. But I think that's why I'm always on the go. And also my mom, when I was a kid, she told me, I never want you to say you're bored.
Mm.
And so she'd always have that bag of activities.
Yeah.
So I don't think I've ever been bored.
Ever. Yeah. Now, are you only child then?
I am. Yeah.
Oh, okay,
I had a stepsister. I'm an only child.
You had a stepsister? I'm sorry.
Oh, yeah. My mom divorced the guy.
Oh, okay. I was like, don't know what happened. Like,
no, she didn't die.
We
She's
lost her.
Alive and well.
Okay, good. Okay, good. Yeah.
We actually have the same name. Her name is Alyssa. And then that's actually one of the reasons why I'm strongly about Alyssa Ray.
Yeah. Which is, where does the name come from? That's such a unique.
My mom, it was between Alyssa Ray and Zoe Ray.
Okay, so Ray was always going to be in there, always, no matter what.
My mom says I'm her ray of sunshine.
Oh, that's nice.
Isn't cute? And then I think at one point my mom mentioned she liked Alyssa Milano.
Oh.
But I don't know. I don't know. But I just know I focus on I'm your ray of sunshine.
Ray, yeah. That's the important
part.
That's
the key part. Yeah.
That's cool. That makes sense. I mean, so you had two parents doting over you, keeping you busy, doing all kinds of stuff. You're the ray of sunshine.
Yeah, sunshine. I was the only grandchild for like 15 years.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So that was it.
I was constantly.
That's why you're a powerhouse, because you are the not the focus of attention, but definitely
just like doing,
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah, yeah, I was always going to like Las Yardas with my abuelitos, and my grandpa, who's a big influence in my life, he was always teaching me how to use a jigsaw, how to use a hammer, how to do all these things in his workshop. Yeah. So I think because of all those experiences, I was just like, literally anything is possible, because you kind of just have to.
Yeah. It's fun, actually, when you start to get a point in your life where you see like all the influences before kind of tying together, because when you're going through them, most of the time, I mean, we enjoy them, but then also at the same time, we're like, can't wait to be at this next stage.
Yeah, cool.
Now I'm at that next stage, and I'm like, we're just big kids.
Yeah, that's true.
Cool. All right, last thing. If you know someone who wants to be a curator out there in the world, what would be something that you would, what advice would you give them?
Ooh, continue going out to gallery shows, to museums, galleries, small maker shows. Keep going out and honestly just chat with people.
Yeah.
I think now there's this big emphasis on networking.
Right.
And I didn't realize I've been networking the past 6 years. I was just trying to create conversation and build those relationships, not understanding that that was what was helping me move from step to step. I think everybody I met along my path helped me get to that next stepping stone, which was really nice. And so for aspiring curators, just go out there, meet artists, try to put together a show in your living room or coffee shops.
Yeah.
Coffee shops are a great way to start. That's where how my macrame got going. I would drive to different coffee shops in Portland and just be like, oh, I see you have art up. Can I put mine up? And someone would say yes, someone would be no. Be like, okay, hang it up on Sunday. But just go out there and just chat with people, talk with people. And then I guess institutional-wise, do get that degree. It does help. Get the degree in some art adjacent study.
It's good to have that kind of official, but it's good to have the practical experience.
It is. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the practical experience really helps. Oh, hang stuff in your own house.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, man. Some places have preparators, which is the person who's painting the walls, screwing all the pieces in.
Yeah, totally.
Makla does not. We do not. That is me.
There was just a guy, Damien.
He used to do it for a while. An assistant curator or something like that, and that was kind of his role. But now we do not have one of those.
So you're on the ladders, and you're with the level, and with the pencil and the drill, and
all of that, pencil and the hair. I'm actually very thankful for. I have two interns, and then I have a gallery attendant, and I call us the Viz team, and they're over there painting right now.
No,
I love them.
We're
on the ladders. I'm teaching them like, okay, how to measure, and or how to measure properly, because everything's at eye level.
Yeah.
But, for those aspiring curators, hang stuff in your own house and use different, use the D-rings for the wire, use the screws, because there's so many different methods that something that was a bit surprising or was a struggle was trying to figure out, a new hanging method the day that something's supposed to go up.
Oh, that's fun.
That was, it's a different type of fun. But I almost
nail gun, bam,
yeah,
and duct tape.
Sometimes I think as creatives, we almost like that struggle brand of fun, like problem solving. We kind of like to challenge ourselves unnecessarily.
Right, totally. I do like the last minute
the best jolt work kind of comes out. Yeah, I'm pretty stressed. I would say this is definitely a wave of this really needs to happen. I'm confident that I know that this is the kind of pressure that I need to be like, okay, we have XYZ to do. Let's knock it out. Because at this point, there is no time. You just have to do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, last question then, even though that was the last question. What do you do for your to-do lists? How do you organize yourself?
Ooh,
you like a notepad person? You put the top 10 that you can do today? Do you have you use Rike software?
I've tried Asana and all of those other places. No shade to them. It doesn't work for me.
Yeah.
I'm like, I'll put it up there and then I just completely forget. I love pen and paper, a notebook. I have a notebook. I actually have like my to-do list notebooks from like the last 10 years.
Yeah.
Like they're on my shelf.
Yeah. Awesome.
So I always have a hard task, 1 to 3 hard tasks.
Yeah.
Like, what's the task that I've been avoiding?
The hard one.
Yeah, you know, what can actually be done? What do I have the time for?
Yeah.
And then I have some smaller tasks. And sometimes they don't all get done the same day. So I'll just write the next day's date
over the
I'll just cross out the old date. All right, next date.
Yeah.
So having that hard task list and then just kind of have that running list of like, okay, what needs to be done? I try to categorize it because my role, not only am I the curator for the gallery, but I'll also project manage like offsite murals or other things.
Yeah.
So I try to categorize it that way.
Yeah.
And then I'll highlight. Okay, what's actually realistic? What am I realistically going to get to? So if I can cross those off, awesome. And then if I could get to some of the other things, awesome. And then there's just the things where I'm like, yeah, that's tomorrow.
Are you more of a morning person or an evening person, would you say, for your – well, there's two ways, like the production side of it or the creative side of it or the creativity or, you know, like, how do you slice it?
Ooh, before I used to both. It depends on my deadline.
You're a deadline person.
Yeah. I would say the secret project I mentioned, I've been waking up every day and I'll work on it for 2 hours.
Wow, awesome.
Before going to Mokla.
Yeah, awesome.
And I found like having that creative moment in the morning to myself and just working that out and then doing the computer work and the admin stuff, awesome.
Yeah.
I've tried it reverse where I do the day job and then I do the creative at night. I feel more tired that way, kind of burnt out. When I don't have a job and I am full-time artist, then I am a night owl. I could work until 3 a.m. and not realize it's 3 a.m.
Yeah.
But actually, I love an early morning.
Yeah.
Love
there
that,
is something special.
That quiet morning, that fresh air, coffee to myself kind of thing or with my partner and just like, okay, nobody's up right now. I could just sit here. Nobody's texting me, emailing me.
Good. Okay, let's give the whole deets about the doctor. Opening the 7th.
Exhibition, the 2023 Latinx Art Now auction. Exhibition opens April 7th, first Friday, free to the public.
What time is it?
Open from 5 to 10 p.m.
Okay.
And then it'll be up for about 6 weeks. And the live auction will be on Saturday, May 20th from 6 to 10 p.m. And it'll be outdoors, so very COVID-friendly.
Nice.
You know, we're celebrating 45, almost 50 contemporary artists. I think it's a great way for the community to meet the artists who create the piece because a lot of the artists will attend just to celebrate. They don't have to be there. You don't have to be there. You can just be there just to enjoy the company of like the folks who go are people who like art. So they want to celebrate you as the artist. Yeah. So it's really fun.
That's cool. And how do people find out about this stuff? What's the taglines and the Instagrams and the World Wide Webs?
Yeah, I would just follow us. Follow us on Instagram, Mokla San Jose. Ooh, there might be an underscore in there. Mokla underscore San Jose.
We'll check it out.
You'll look it up. You'll see it.
But
the only one.
Is
moklaarte.org.
Okay.
And on there you can find all the information about the auction. You'll actually see some of the pieces that are going to be in the auction. Shout out to somebody on my Viz team, Fernanda. She's been putting that together. So that way you can kind of see the pieces ahead of time and kind of plan your strategy. Everything on the website and on Instagram. That's kind of what we use most. We don't really use any other platforms.
Yeah. Cool. All right. Well, congratulations on your first show that you put together and then now putting together the auction. And I'm super excited for your position at Mokla. I mean,
thank you.
Even though I was trying to steal you for the content team. I'm trying to steal everybody that we interview for the content team. But I'm super excited.
Community.
Super excited for you. And thanks for coming out today and being here on the
podcast.
Yeah,
I appreciate it. Yeah, I appreciate y'all.
Thanks. Okay, that's it. Oh, let's do a clap again. 1, 2, 3.
Thank you for listening to the Content Magazine podcast. Follow us on social media at Content Mag. Become a member and help us to continue to tell the stories of the South Bay creatives. This episode's music is 408 by Jack Pavlina. Follow him on Spotify and also on his Instagram at Jack Pavlina Music.